What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane. It is Monday afternoon, and we are going through the Week 5 recap, but we also have five surprising stats so far from the NFL. Want to shed some light on some things that may not be completely obvious to the naked eye. I mean, some things that we certainly, maybe people who are diving and swimming in these statistics probably know or could say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But some surprising stats, some interesting things thus far after we've seen 5 weeks from these teams, some things that are certainly standing out, some interesting ideas about some things that we have to pay attention to. Hey, before we go too far, I want to just say thank you, new patrons in there. Patreon.com/lineuplogic$10 for the full month of October cheat sheets, as well as the lineup show. Lineup show was a whole lot of fun. Lineup show is where, man, you know, it is a more in-depth, candid discussion about some ideas that we have had. And it's just hard to get all of the ideas out there. But when we get 4 or 5 minds cranking all at once on ideas for lineup construction, we discussed we discussed Wentz stacked with Torrey Smith and Nelson Agholor. We discussed Melvin Gordon. We were talking up the value of Brian Hoyer and T.Y. Hilton and all that kind of stuff. So there was a lot of information to be learned in that lineup show. It's just kind of an extra resource, that extra show that patrons get at the end of the week. We do it every Friday night. It's a lot of fun, but we just kind of talk through all the ideas that we've had throughout the week. So there's been some really, really, really good takes from Josh Fern, from myself, Mike Alexander, Joe Berg come on there as well. It's been really fun. So jump in there, man, if you're so inclined. We're going to jump straight into this because I don't want to take too much of your time on this Monday afternoon, but I have 5 quick stats. So let's take a look back at what we saw from the previous slate. One of these nights. So I'm just going to breeze through some stuff here, some really interesting things that have stood out to me. This weekend was kind of annoying. I was through halftime of Sunday Night Football. I was like, okay, all right. Decent take on the weekend. Not my favorite, not my best take of the week, of the year so far. But I was like, you know what? Goofy weekend. Devontae Parker goes out, leaves the game. I'll take it, I'll take it. And then explosion of Deshaun Watson in the Houston offense just totally sideswiped me. I don't know what else to say. So, I'm poking around. I'm thinking, let's make sure I know all these different angles, trying to dive deep on some of the things that I think you have to start to pay attention to this year, because I think that there are trends that are clear enough to this point that, we have to be aware of them. If we're not paying attention to them, then we're going to miss the boat on some things that are really, really important. So five surprising stats. There's a lot more stats in here, but they kind of broke them up into 5 categories. 1, on wide receivers, Antonio Brown currently leads the NFL in targets. He leads the league in yards per reception, and is leading the league in PPR value. Antonio Brown has only 1 receiving touchdown this year. That's insane. That is unbelievable. All of the other guys who are up there in the top 5 right now have multiple touchdowns to their name. The fact that Antonio Brown hasn't seen those touchdowns means that we're going to see some touchdown regression from him shortly. The volume of targets, the quality of player, etc., we know we're going to see some touchdown regression for him soon. He's only been at home twice this season, okay? He's only been at home twice this year, where we know that's when Big Ben actually has the ability to succeed. He has not been great on the road this year. Big Ben hasn't been that great anyway, but he is peppering AB with targets at home this year. Antonio Brown's seen 30 total targets. That's insane. He has four total games out of his five where he has seen at least 11 targets or more. And he is still not leading all wide receivers in scoring because of those touchdowns. Now, those other top wide receivers in fantasy production, A.J. Green, he scored touchdowns in back-to-back-to-back weeks. Stephon Diggs, this is insane. Stephon Diggs is currently one of the most efficient fantasy wide receivers, scoring 15 points per game, and he hasn't even played week five. He's going up against the Chicago Bears secondary with Sam Bradford back that currently ranks 30th in defensive DVOA to the wide receiver one. Stephon Diggs is just almost borderline unfadeable at this point. When we see him in a decent matchup, if Bradford can stay healthy, you are looking at a guy who has the same amount of volume and talent and efficiency as Antonio Brown from a fantasy perspective. So unbelievable numbers there. And of course, DeAndre Hopkins, who is unbelievably effective, but you have to correlate a lot of his effectiveness to his ability to get in the end zone. Three touchdowns last night really, really gave him a boost. He only caught four passes out on 12 targets. He's still leading in targets, but he has multiple games where his catch rate is well below 50%, which kind of makes him really, really inefficient, even though the target share is elite. So there's these kind of weird outlier type things with guys like DeAndre Hopkins and Antonio Brown, where their production can continue to be elite, where A.J. Green and Stephon Diggs kind of are exactly what we thought they were. Guess who's number five, though, in PPR scoring overall this year? Chris Hogan. 12 fantasy points per game. He has at least one touchdown in every single game this year. 20 targets in his last two games from Tommy. Tommy's found, I think, his favorite target. He's not the underneath target that Amendola is. He's not necessarily the deep target, but he is running some really high-quality intermediate routes for Tommy there. And they're finding a lot of rapport. And with the fact that the Patriots' defense is bad is getting him involved in the red zone a lot. This is crazy, by the way. Guess who's 6 and 7 in PPR scoring? Devontae Adams and Jordy Nelson. The fact that Aaron Rodgers can support a two top 10 fantasy wide receivers in PPR scoring is mind-blowing. It is mind-blowing. This is just further evidence of something that I always point out. The Packers' passing offense is in play every single week. Every single week. It should be a no-brainer. You should have exposure to the Packers' passing game every single week. There's no reason not to. There's really no reason not to, unless there's an elite, a terrible matchup or something like that. But it's something to very, very, very aware of. Here's the second thing. Quarterbacks. Diving into the quarterback position here. Carson Wentz, Alex Smith, and Jared Goff, currently 3, 4, and 5 atop the leaderboards behind, I believe, Drew Brees and Tommy Brady. And total offense created, meaning total yards created. Unbelievable to see those three names up there. Very unsuspecting characters. Have they been the benefits of good matchups? Yes. But here are some interesting points about those individual quarterbacks. Zach Ertz has created 12 yards per touch. That's top five amongst pass catchers in the league. That's the same. He's on the same list as Green, Antonio Brown, and Tyreek Hill. He is number five on that list of yards created per touch. Zach Ertz is almost one of the most. He's probably one of the most valuable pass catchers that there is. Jared Goff is hurling the ball this year deep. Huge numbers of deep attempts, massive yards per attempt, a 108 passer rating on 39 attempts deep this year. He threw 17 deep passes against the Seahawks on Sunday. That's a huge number. That is a huge number for a second-year quarterback. McVay is clearly comfortable with letting him air it out. The Seahawks barely allowed him to do it. And here's the crazy thing. If you want a buy low candidate, Sammy Watkins, he's only been targeted on two routes in his last two games. Pretty crazy to think about how Sammy Watkins really can't buy a target from Jared Goff right now, and Jared Goff is creating so much offense. There's got to be a change. We've seen some chemistry there. There's going to be spots where Sammy Watkins is really, really undervalued. So we're going to keep our eye on these three guys because they're not household names. And Alex Smith, of course, we think of him as such a boring game manager. He's on a record pace, man. This guy is insane this year. Zero interceptions, 76% completion rate, 7% TD passing rate, which is second in the league, by the way. 125 passer rating. And he has two guys leading. Hill, 12 yards per touch, just like Zach Ertz. And Kareem Hunt leading the league in all-purpose yards. Got 32 touches last night. Again, massive volume. Actually, the biggest volume that we saw from him. He wasn't able to get in the end zone, but the volume was certainly there. Christian McCaffrey, here's a third thought. Christian McCaffrey, top 10 in all-purpose yards this year. Top 10 in all-purpose yards. I don't know if we would necessarily consider that. He's second in target amongst running backs. He's fourth in receiving yards amongst running backs. Third in receptions among running backs. His role is abundantly clear, and it has a lot of PPR value. I think it's really interesting. He's creating almost a whole fantasy point per opportunity, and like Antonio Brown, one touchdown to show for it, even though he has been putting up good yardage, good production in that offense. He hasn't broken anything. That's the issue. He hasn't had any breakaway runs. He hasn't had any space. People have been on him hard because I think it's very clear what his role is and when plays are developing for him. So linebackers are spying him and getting those tackles. But he has some nice spots up in the schedule. He's got the Falcons, he's got the Bears, he's got the Saints, he's got the Jets. So there are going to be weeks when we could see explosive usage from Christian McCaffrey. It's just a matter of time. So keep him on your short list. Listen, I'm going to be the first to admit that I'm late on the Deshaun Watson bandwagon. I am late. But I am still skeptical, and let me tell you why. He has the highest touchdown rate on passing plays thus far. He leads the league in QBR, and he's second behind Aaron Rodgers in TDs. Sean, why are you skeptical? It has to regress. You look at what he did last night with his leading receiver connecting on only 4 of 12 targets with one of the worst offensive lines in football. The kid is a playmaker, but that's not all adding up to logical production. Alex Smith's completion rate, the production at the running back, the production of the offensive line makes sense. Tom Brady is above, you know, all of these guys have elite pieces around them. It really feels like Watson is relying on the talent of Hopkins and Fuller to create plays. And I worry that that's going to slow down. That's my thing. Here's the thing, though. Kid is rushing 4-plus times per game. He's averaging almost 20 rushing yards per game. He's throwing 30 times per game, and 8% of those completions go for touchdowns. I don't know how to explain it. You just have to trust that the kid is a playmaker. I think that regression is going to come hard because this is a well above average number. And you see, you know, even the most elite touchdown rates aren't that high. I mean, Rodgers doesn't have an elite a touchdown rate that high. You know, Tommy Brady doesn't have a touchdown rate. Drew Brees doesn't have a touchdown rate that high. I don't necessarily put Deshaun Watson in the same category as them, and I don't put their offensive line in that category. So I think that there's going to be some difficult spots upcoming for Deshaun Watson when we have to say pump the brakes. That said, the kid is a great fantasy asset, and he's a blast to watch. I'm not going to ever doubt that, and I'm going to root for him completely. I loved his work at Clemson. Last but not least, a couple defensive statistics for you. You got to kind of wrap your head around here. Detroit, Miami, Cleveland, and Philadelphia. What do you think those teams have in common from a defensive perspective? Elite run units, 75 rush yards or fewer per game this year, allowing less than 20 points per game on the defensive side of the ball. And we're seeing a correlation here. There's a correlation between elite rush units and very low points per game, below 20 points per game scored, elite pass units and below 20 points per game scored. The sweet spot seems to be teams that allow above average production to both, or average production to both. It's really interesting. On the rushing side, or excuse me, on the passing side of things, Steelers, Bengals, Jags, Panthers, allowing less than 20 points per game. I think what's interesting to me is that the Steelers, Bengals, Jags, and Panthers, we look at those names and we say, oh yeah, good defenses. Yep. Nope, I know. And their pass units are excellent so far this year. But we see names like Detroit, Miami, Cleveland, Philadelphia, and we don't see an elite defense, just not on paper. But what we have to realize is their ability to stop the run actually does slow down a lot of defenses or offenses. And so I think it's something to keep in mind. I mean, because our tendency may be, hey, man, these are funnel defenses. They're allowing people to throw the ball on them. They're stopping the rush. Yes, but they're also, because they're so effective on the front, in the front seven, they're actually stopping teams from scoring as well. Only 17 points per game, and keeping games relatively boring for the most part. So I think there's something to be said for that, understanding where that correlation lies in tough opponents and what teams are very good at funnels and reverse funnel defenses. Philadelphia and Kansas City, what do you think those defenses have in common? 29% and 31% success rate on deep routes. Two teams that are allowing massive counting stats to the wide receiver production, to the wide receiver, but they don't allow deep routes. It's really, really interesting, and it makes a lot of sense to me, because what we see is Andy Reid and Doug Peterson, same coaching tree, same defensive philosophy. They're going to allow anything in between the 20s. They're going to allow above average ball movement production. They're not going to allow you to beat them with the big play, and they're not going to allow you to take the top off of a defense. So, you know, Philadelphia, for example, this weekend, why do you think that the Arizona struggled so much in that passing scheme? Well, because they don't throw anything underneath. They don't go intermediate. This isn't Tom Brady throwing a bunch of slant routes to Danny Amendola. This isn't Phillip Rivers peppering Keenan Allen for, 8-9 yard targets that turn into big gainers. This isn't Eli Manning getting the ball out in 2 seconds to Odell and Sterling Shepard straight across the middle. Those are the teams that have destroyed the Philadelphia Eagles. The vertical passing attack of the Cardinals really struggled because they don't allow the deep ball. Rushing defense, Chargers rush defense is bad, guys. It's bad. We saw one of the most productive days on the ground for two running backs out of New York just this week, to Gallman and Darkwa. Most rush yards allowed in the league. Also, teams like Pittsburgh, New York, and Seattle, three different units that seem good on paper, not that good. Not that good at the rush. Seattle really shored up, and they were able to sell out and completely stop Todd Gurley this week, and they did. That's what their game plan was. Let's just stop Gurley. I think that they are able to do that, and you're probably going to see Seattle creep back more towards the average rather than below average. But Pittsburgh and New York have proven that they were overperforming at the beginning of the year, or they were underperforming, and they're going to continue to underperform against good rush teams. Green Bay also getting up there. We're going to keep a close eye on them because Zeke had a nice game against them this weekend, and they are beginning to give up a lot of production. I think when you have a high-scoring offense like them that's hyper-efficient, you're going to allow a lot of productivity on the opposite side of the ball as well. Two stats that really stand out: Indianapolis and New England's pass defenses. New England has allowed 1,600 total passing yards this season. Unbelievable. Indy also nearly 1,500 passing yards on the season, 1,470. Unbelievable amount of production allowed, and they are also correlating with a lot of points scored. Now, we saw New England slow down the Tampa Bay offense a little bit this week, even though Tampa Bay should have won that game on the foot of their kicker. But what are you going to do? I think that we have to continue to attack these units is my point. We have to continue to attack these units. They're allowing massive yardage. They're allowing teams to move the ball. They're allowing teams to score points, so we have to continue to attack them. Those are five thoughts, guys. Five things that you may not have noticed or you may have noticed. I don't know. I don't want to pretend like I'm, you know, earth-shattering information source here. I apologize if you've heard or you kind of know this stuff, but I think it's interesting to try to wrap your head around some of these things and just kind of keep them, turn them over in your mind. So let's jump into the game-by-game breakdown, figure out what we learned from Thursday all the way through last night. First game, of course, was New England-Tampa Bay. What a letdown of the year. This is why I don't play the Thursday night slates, because they are just so hard to project. Everybody projected San Francisco-LA to be the worst game of the year. It's been the best game of the year. Everybody projected this game to be the best game of the year. The lack of rest and preparation really makes for these games to be a slop fest. Here's what's really interesting about this game, however. 50% success rate on all plays for both teams. Solid fifth field position. Both began around the 50-yard line. Solid first down rate. Both teams able to create 21 and 23 first downs, respectively. Why didn't this turn into touchdowns? Why didn't this turn into a shootout and scoring that everyone wanted to see? Teams couldn't convert on third down. Cutter and Belichick basically said, we're shutting it down on third down situations, and they were excellent, extremely well prepared for third down situations. Play success rate dropped to 30% on third down. Really says a lot about the way that these two coaches game planned for each other. They recognize third down situations and try to get the other team off the field, they allow them to move the ball in other situations, but on third down, they really batten down the hatches and they stop the other offense. Very interesting. That's really the only thing that I can say. I mean, you probably would have seen more scoring had Jameis been able to have a higher completion rate. He struggled a little bit. 57% completion rate is very Jameis-y of him. But, you know, listen, he's a young guy who's struggled with completions his entire life. He's got amazing arm talent. He has the ability to really create a lot of throws that some people can't. But he really does struggle with his completion rate, and that's going to be something that you're going to have to really bite the bullet if you want to ever have him in a fantasy setting. So, you know, the backfields, I think, is where people are kind of scratching their head. The wide receivers, it's clear. It's DeSean Jackson. Mike Evans, you know, was a little bit of a letdown, of course. But then you had Chris Hogan, Danny Amendola, Brandon Cooks, all guys racking up good amount of targets. The target share's there. They're running the routes. You're not really scared of any of their positions in the offense. Cam Brate once again came through. What you can't really decipher is backfields. I think the one thing that's nice to take away is Doug Martin saw the majority of the snaps. He was super productive, and there are going to be spots where we need to go to Doug Martin, absolutely, because we know that in positive game script, Dirk Cutter is going to run the ball, and he will not be afraid to give Doug Martin 20-plus carries. It's not this week against the Cardinals, but I think that there are some good spots here. James White is on the field the most for the Patriots. So from a fantasy perspective, he's your most consistent asset. But Gillislee and even now Deion Lewis are very productive on a yards per carry basis. The problem is that they're rolling these guys into one rusher. They're not treating anyone like LeGarrette Blount. Last year they had a dearth of, because of injuries, they gave LeGarrette Blount an unruly amount of carries. Gillislee hasn't been able to get into the end zone recently, so it's very difficult to project this New England backfield, but I think it's not difficult to project it. You know what it is. What's frustrating is that you can't necessarily take advantage of the spots when you want, because it's hard to project touchdowns. That's the difficult. So as I mentioned earlier, Chris Hogan. Amendola seeing a lot of targets. Brandon Cooks, fine. Okay, I get it. You can have Brandon Cooks. He's the most sexy fantasy asset. But right now, Hogan and Amendola are producing the most consistently. And Chris Hogan is the one that I'm going to continue to look at as they go into week six. The Pats will be facing the Jets. Give me that. Give me naked Tom Brady. Give me James White. I don't really care. I just need exposure to this offense in some way, shape, or form, and I'm probably comfortable getting it in that way. Philadelphia, Arizona. Oh, man. Wrote up Carson Wentz. Wish I had taken my own advice. I'm kidding. I went Dak, so I was okay with that. I was okay with my quarterback. I was in love with Dak. After all, I love rooting for that guy. So Carson Wentz, though, phenomenal. 4 touchdowns, 3 deep ones, 300 plus yards passing, blew this game wide open from the start. 400 total yards of offense for Philadelphia. He only threw the ball 30 times and put up over 30 fantasy points. That's the third time in a row he has had 30 attempts. That seems to be his magic number. It really seems like what Doug Peterson wants to do is get a lead, play with the lead. Makes sense. Really makes sense. Aguilar and Smith, man, it's going to be really hard to project. Don't chase them. Let's not chase them. But in situations when Alshon Jeffrey is going to be blanketed, then yeah, okay, we can go to Nelson Aguilar. I trust Nelson Aguilar's talent a little bit more than I trust Torrey Smith. I think, you know, we've seen him get more targets, and he just looked unbelievable on that deep route. LeGarrette Blount still got 14 carries, 6 yards per carry, 74 total yards. That offensive line is so damn good that LeGarrette Blount has these just alleys. And what he just gets up to speed, he gets into the second level, people try to make arm tackles, and it's over. Because that's what Blount does. You can't stack the box against this team because Wentz will check out of it and throw the ball, and that's a real thing. So really, really good stuff from Blount. I think that he's the back that we trust. By the way, Spectre, you owe me a beer because of these Corey Clement, Wayne Gallman bet. We bet who would have more fantasy points. Although he's like, I'll take it just because I'm a Clement guy. But I really do think I'm going to get the short end of the stick here. I was like, yep, Wayne Gallman, baby. That's enough about Gallman. On the Arizona side of things, listen, Andre Ellington had as many targets as Larry Fitzgerald. He is useful. There is no reason to doubt his utility in your DraftKings lineups. You can play Andre Ellington in the flex from here forward. Fair? 10 targets, 10 catches. And he had like 65 yards. Tell me you don't want that. Tell me you don't want that. And you're lying to me. You're lying to me. The man is a cheap slot receiver that you get to play the running back position. It's unbelievable. By the way, John Brown outsnapped Jerron Brown. Fuck. I don't know what to add. You can't. The only assets you really can trust right now are Larry and Andre Ellington. It's really hard to project who's going to get target volume outside of those. Palmer threw 44 times. He only completed 24 passes. I talked about this deep route thing. You guys heard 29% success rate on deep targets. It was 70 for 36. It's a scheme thing, man. They take away the deep stuff. Okay, that's why you got to be interested in the slot receivers. You got to be interested in the underneath guy. Larry had 10 targets. He just only caught 6 of them, and was only created 51 yards. It was, you know, the game script was there. You got to get the touchdown. Cincinnati Buffalo. Good win for Cincinnati, man. Good win for Cincinnati. This was an ugly game, but these two teams, they're not ugly teams. They have good defensive units and serviceable quarterback play and a couple skill position players that are interesting. I think I'd rather be rooting for one of these teams than rooting for some of these other teams out there right now. You know, it's not all hope is lost in Cincinnati or Buffalo. Dalton with over 300 yards passing again against a solid defense. I mean, we saw Matt Ryan couldn't even get that done, and AJ Green absolutely went ham. He had 2 interceptions, but here's the thing about that. Both of them were tipped balls by AJ Green, catchable balls. Both hit AJ Green in the hands. And because I think of the bad weather and just kind of maybe some awkward placement in certain situations, one was just absolutely AJ's fault. Hit him in the numbers and he just popped it straight up over the top of his head. The first one was kind of like he tried to do too much, jumped up and basically batted it down into the guy behind him. Dalton looked good, is my point. Dalton is looking good. If you play that well against this defense, I think that's a good sign for Andy Dalton, especially with Bill Lazor. Think about the last 3 weeks. He had a nice game with solid offensive production against Green Bay. He had the 4 touchdown game against Cleveland. They did what they were supposed to do. They had a nice win here against Buffalo. So I think the Lazor system is working for Dalton. It's working for Green. Dalton Green has seen 33 targets and 3 touchdowns, over 100 yards on average every single game. He almost had 200 yards receiving in this one. So certainly working for Lazor. Mixon led all RBs in with 15 touches and 51 yards, one touchdown. Four touches for Geo, four touches for Jeremy Hill. Listen, there's going to be spots when we don't want to forget about Joe Mixon, because in certain matchup situations, he's going to be productive. We just got to be patient and keep his name in our back pocket. LeSean McCoy, still the volume leader on the Bills. 25 total touches, only 89 yards and no touchdowns. He's another guy that we're not going to sleep on. He let his price drop because he's not scoring touchdowns. Let his price drop because people aren't playing him. But when there are matchups, you have to play LeSean McCoy. He is viable for 150 yards and two TDs every single time he goes out. Bills tight ends continue to lead in targets. Charles Clay is going to be out. Nick O'Leary saw six targets and four receptions. Tyrod loves his tight end. He loves the tight end. No doubt about it. And these wide receivers are hard to project. They'd know Jordan Matthews, Zay Jones, and what his name was, something Tate. I forget that kid's name. He's fast. But it's going to be difficult to project the Bills offense for anything really fantasy relevant beyond LeSean McCoy. Jets, Cleveland. Way to go, Jets. Thank you for covering. If the Niners had covered, I would have been in a good spot. Jets, Cleveland, ASJ seeing more targets each and every single week. That's what we like to see. Finally got in the end zone. He's basically only getting 5 yards per catch. It's just this dink and dunk role that they have for him, even though this guy is a massive, he's an athletic monster. He should be able to run 8-9 yard routes, try to get out in space against some of these linebackers. They're not using him that way. And so as much sex appeal as ASJ has against the Browns, we may have to start reconsidering how much utility he has for fantasy, because unless he scores a touchdown, he's going to be a letdown wide receiver. So it was nice to have that touchdown this week. Once again, man, the Cleveland rush defense shows up. 1.9 yards per carry, limiting Bilal Powell and Elijah McGuire to a 22% success rate. Unbelievable. And listen, Kevin Hogan, truth or meaning, starts today. I have no love for Deshaun Kizer. He went to Notre Dame. I got no love for Notre Dame. You guys know this. Maybe you don't. I'm a Boston College graduate. No love for Notre Dame. Kevin Hogan, however, let's go, Kevin Hogan. 122 passer rating. Kizer had a 38. There's zero excuse for Hugh Jackson to start Deshaun Kizer next week. Zero excuse. After way Hogan, he went 16 for 19, nearly two passing yards and two touchdowns. He put them back in this game. I mean, you have to play this kid next week. You have to. He ran four times for 30 yards. That was more than Kizer. Kizer had 29 rushing yards. Kevin Hogan had more. He looks good. Duke Johnson made an insane play. David Njoku made an insane play. They have talent. And it really does feel like Kevin Hogan, if he is at quarterback, he is going to make some of these pieces more fantasy relevant. I have to be honest with you. I really, really do. I am a little bit more bullish on the Browns if they are going to start Kevin Hogan. I think that it's really interesting. They get the Texans next week. Not my favorite. But if Hogan starts, there's some interesting ideas that we could have there, because the Texans defense is not perfect. And they just lost J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus for the year. So they're probably going to be in a bit of trouble. The Jets are getting the Pats next week at home. We already talked about that. Carolina, Detroit. I mean, no, you can't play McCown against them. You might be able to play Elijah McGuire. That would be what I'm interested in. But the problem is Belichick isn't going to let this team do anything to them. I mean, he plays them every year. He knows Todd Bowles like a book. Carolina, Detroit. There's nothing worse than eating crow about Cam Newton. He looked good, man. Detroit pass defense to this point was top five in AFPA, but they got shredded. He went 355 and three touchdowns, spread the ball around, Funchess TD, two to Calvin Benjamin. Of course, we all projected the Ed Dixon 200-yard receiving game. Give me a break. This is one of those situations where you project the matchup, not the player, okay? The matchup for the Carolina tight end is a good one. Who's playing tight end? It's Ed Dixon. Fine. I will take it. You know, that's what you have to kind of do with some of these situations. You're not going to get name brand players, right? I mean, that's the hard part. In a lot of these spots, you have to try to project matchup over, you know, it was like the Arizona passing. You're not going to, how are we going to play Torrey Smith? He's had terrible numbers this year. Well, you project the matchup. It's a good matchup that he had. And so you plug your nose, you take a risk. And there's certain situations where you got to project matchup over player. And that's how you could have projected Ed Dixon. But that's it. That's it. You know, it was, I was just an embarrassing line that they allowed to this guy. The Panthers ran the ball for 28 total yards. Jonathan Stewart literally went like 21 for 21. He was terrible. Cam ran the ball 7 times, 0 yards. This Detroit rush defense is no joke. This front 7 is not a joke. They are not great on the back end right now, but they are a really, really solid rush unit. And I think this front 7 is certainly certainly showing some talent. We saw them in that, limit the Minnesota offense to only 7 points in that week before. And I thought for sure this would be a real snoozer, but not quite. Kelvin Benjamin and Funchess, guys, in certain situations, the teams that allow red zone success, we got to go to them because these guys are gigantic. And if you watch these highlights of their touchdowns, Cam's just saying, let's go, let's play ball. I'm 6'5", you're 6'5", we're bigger than everybody, let's just meet up here in the air, and you guys go get the football. I mean, Darius Slay is a beast, but Darius Slay can't keep up with Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funch's size. You just say, like, I'm going to put the ball up at this 8-foot mark, it's just not going to, you can't do it. On the Detroit side, Abdullah saw the most touches. Of course, Zach Zinner sniped the goal line work, and Riddick got all the passing down work, which is really, really tilting, because right when we thought that we were going to see Amir Abdullah every down back, you saw exactly the nightmare situation that you hoped wouldn't happen, that Zach Zinner would come in on goal lines and Riddick would get the passing down work and hurry up situations. Nope. Abdullah only works between the 20s and he's going to continue to get the most touches. The problem is that he's probably only useful in situations when they have really nice game script. Marvin Jones, underrated. This is another guy. Keep him in your back pocket. 8 targets this week, matched Golden Tate in back-to-back weeks with targets. He's on the field as much as Tate. His snap rate is above 95%. This week he ran 100% of snaps. This guy's getting the minutes. Like, he's getting all of the work, and he is going to go off. Like, lest we forget the Marvin Jones weeks that we had last year. Marvin Jones is going to have a lot of productive weeks. Carolina playing on Thursday night this week against the Eagles. That should be a real snoozer of a defensive fest for the most part, I think. And the Lions are getting the Saints. So when a better time? What's a better time to start thinking about Marvin Jones, baby? Let's go. Marvin Jones. Chargers, Giants, the squeaky wheel gets the ball. And that squeaky wheel's name was Melvin Gordon. Damn, 28 opportunities, 26 total touches. Unbelievable for Gordon. I got to wonder really if it was health. Like, it really was actually the knee that was bothering him in the last 2 weeks, and that's just why they didn't put him out there, because he was trying to go, it just wasn't working, he's come back to the sideline, and trainers were bugging him, and he's gone, yeah, it just doesn't feel right. That's what I'm wondering. 6.2 yards per touch, had the 2 touchdowns. Listen, the Chargers know, I think they know, if they can figure out how to get Melvin Gordon involved in an effective way in the game plan, that they're going to have a more balanced attack, and they're going to have a better chance of winning. They looked like a balanced football team this week. They looked like they had more than one gear beyond Keenan Allen and Phillip Rivers. Even though Keenan Allen still saw 11 targets, that won't change. The thing that we have to remember is people may not talk about him because he had a tough matchup and he only caught like five passes. But double-digit targets every single week. He is in the same company and target company as AB, DeAndre Hopkins, all these guys who are getting double-digit target weeks every single time. Hunter Henry has the job. It's over. He played more snaps. He got more targets. He got 3 end zone targets and made a filthy catch. He's got Rivers' trust. He's got the coach's trust. It's moving. We're moving away from Antonio Gates. Antonio Gates is going to be a red zone decoy guy. Hunter Henry is going to be there every down tight end. That's what I see. I see it kind of going as a 60-40 split. Gates will get 40% of snaps maybe just to kind of keep him healthy and keep him in red zone situations and schemes where people have to account for him. And I think he's useful there. You can't leave Antonio Gates and Phillip Rivers open in the red zone. He's going to score more touchdowns this year. The problem is that, well, the real fantasy value, though, is going to be in Hunter Henry, who continues to be their most efficient tight end. He was very, very good. On the Giants side, three wide receivers, three broken ankles. And you know what? It's interesting. I don't think they're going to fire Ben McAdoo now, because what do you do? Why are you going to fire Ben McAdoo? You're 0-5. You just lost Odell for the season. What are you going to do? What's the point? Just ride it out. Just tank. Just tell McAdoo to tank. You're going to need to get a new quarterback. You hold on to the defense. You hold on to Gallman. You draft a million and one offensive lineman to try and protect Eli. You bring everybody back next year and you see if you can put something together while Eli still can stand straight up. Darkwood got the touchdown, but don't get it twisted. Gallman led in touches, 16 total touches, 3.8 yards after contact. He saw 5 targets. Listen, his passing volume is real. He's going to continue to get the passing volume. He is going to be out there on passing downs. They like this kid. This team is trending in the wrong direction. They're going to give the rookie work. They're going to see what they have in him. And I'm telling you, he's going to be viable, continue to be viable in these matchups coming up. Upcoming for both of these teams, the Chargers are getting the Raiders. Very interesting. The Giants are getting the Broncos. So we're not touching the Giants. This is a good, nice CJ Anderson week, though, that's for sure. And the Chargers against the Raiders, we may be able to go right back to Melvin Gordon and Keenan Allen, no doubt about it, because that Chargers defense, that Raiders defense, just it's struggling. San Francisco, Indianapolis. T.Y. Hilton at home. You don't have to question this man. It's like Antonio Brown at home, T.Y. Hilton at home, A.J. Green at home. You don't question these guys. It doesn't really matter what's going on. Doesn't matter who's there. They're matchup proof. He is filthy. He's so good. And Brissett, man, I love this guy. I love Jacoby Brissett. I like him. You know, I love a backup quarterback who does well for himself. Get paid. Stay relevant. You know, get some more money out there for him. Luck isn't coming back anytime soon. And honestly, the Colts probably will sign him again. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you have a good backup quarterback who has won the games that he's supposed to win against Cleveland and San Francisco. He kept you in it for a half in Seattle. Okay. He's not bad. You know, he's easy to like. So give him some credit. The problem is the Indianapolis backfield is just so hard to decipher. Marlon Mack is the most talented. If you saw the Marlon Mack touchdowns yesterday, you went, oh, wow. They have a running back. It's not Frank Gore anymore. I mean, the Frank Gore man, first 8 yards of the game, he added himself to a list of elite rushers and have tipped the cap, man. Frank Gore's the man. I love that guy. But it's Marlon Mack's turn. And they're going to try to get him more usage. But the problem is that I think it's going to be more 50-50 than we like. And Mack is going to be the change of pace back. They're going to try to get him in space in certain situations, but they'll give Gore plenty of carries. And for some reason, the only goal line carry went to Robert Turbin. Again, Robert Turbin didn't score a touchdown. He can't score on the goal line. I don't understand what they're doing. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. Hopefully Marlon Mack takes that job. As for San Francisco, George Kittle hype train. Let's go. George Kittle, Tyler Higbee hype train is getting, is here. It is, we're boarding. And I mentioned this on Twitter last night. All you have to do is believe. It's like the Polar Express. You know that Christmas book? You just have to believe. And that's how you get a ticket. You have to be a believer in George Kittle, the man from Iowa. 9 targets, 93 yards, touchdown. Frustrated with myself. Really frustrated with myself. I've been keeping an eye on Kittle all season. And this was a project the matchup, don't project the player. We hadn't seen Kittle pop yet. Now we know Kittle can pop in the right matchup. This was the best matchup that he's had. Indianapolis allows way above average production to the tight end. And Kittle just saw it was the benefit of game script and volume. So Marquise Goodwin whew, man, that guy can stretch the field. Nearly 100 yards on only 5 receptions. Garcon, 11 targets, 9 catches, 100 yards, looked good. Hoyer, I mean, he's not terrible. They just can't figure out how to score. They were the benefits of massive, massive number Hoyer attempts, 25 for 46, 353 total passing yards. Listen, if you're going to allow 353 total passing yards on 25 completions, you clearly have a problem in your secondary. Colts secondary is an issue, okay? It's an issue. Vontae Davis or not, it's a problem. This is a problem for them. Carlos Hyde, God, that was depressing. I was all over him. Apparently, he got benched. They went hot hand approach with Matt Breida, and Matt Breida started knocking out 6 yards per touch, so he was way more effective than Hyde, who was like 2 yards per carry. Absolutely brutal. So not thrilled about the Carlos Hyde struggles there. Really not thrilled. That was not fun, but hey, what are you going to do? And next week, San Francisco and Indianapolis, one of these teams is on a bye. San Francisco going to the Redskins. That's not a great matchup for them. That certainly is going to be a tough one. Oh, no, the Colts are on Monday night, and they got the Titans. T.Y. Hilton at home, baby. Oh, no, they're in Nashville. God, I hope Marcus Mariota plays. The primetime slate would be worth playing just to play Marcus Mariota against the Colts passing defense. Brings me to the worst game of the day, Tennessee-Miami. I watched this game, and oh my, this was the worst football game I've ever seen. Like, fans were booing, even though the Dolphins were winning. Neither team broke 190 yards offense, nor did they break more than 3.2 yards per play. Parker leaves on the first series. Castle goes 21 for 32 for 141 yards. Brian Hoyer completed 4 more passes and had 210 yards more passing. How is that possible, Matt Castle? Mike Mularkey? What is going on here? What is happening? Ajayi had every chance for the bounce back that I was like, I'm in on the Ajayi bounce back game. 27 total touches. Yes. Huge snap rate. Yes. 77 yards, no touchdown. Oh my God. They fired the O-line coach because he's banging lines before meetings. Who in their right mind like takes a like, I miss you, I love you, sweetheart video, banging coke off of a desk? What? Dude, you need to spend some QT alone in a facility and just kind of like sort some things out. Like, you had a good job, but you're sending your girlfriend videos of you banging lines off of a desk? Like, yeah, dang, wish you were here, girl. We would be doing lines and going to film meetings. What? Who is this guy? Bizarre. Bizarre. Really weird. Jay was terrible. Jay was at peak Jay. 52 passer rating. 52% completion rate of the... I have 52 and 26 here. I can't remember if he was a 52% completion rate or a 26% completion rate. Let's get this right. Let's make sure that we understand how bad Jay truly was, okay? I want to make sure that you guys don't miss this. So I'm going to try and make sure that I get these numbers correct, because it's very important that we understand how bad Jay Cutler was in this situation. If I'm correct, it was a 52% completion rate with a 26%. It's taken a long time to add. Okay, either way, those numbers were terrible. Jay was terrible. They were calling for Matt Moore, and I can't blame them. I don't know why they don't start Matt Moore. Jarvis Landry must just be depressed. Like, he's at the end of his rookie deal at the end of the year. Get out, man. Just get out. It's not working. Tannehill isn't going to work either. It's not going to work. Jacksonville, Pittsburgh. Whew! It's easy to see one thing here. It's easy to look at this and go, man, Big Ben's interceptions. Holy smokes, 5 interceptions. Jacksonville pass defense is too good. Very true. They are filthy good. They are insanely talented in every single corner, through safety, through line. They are so talented. They have five defensive backs that rated above 81 in PFF grade. That's insanity. That's all a well above average, nearing on excellent. Just unbelievable performances from these defensive backs. But let's make one thing really, really clear. The effectiveness of this pass defense makes this team dominant in all phases. Create the turnovers, short fields, run the ball, drain the clock. That's their offensive scheme. Put pressure on the passing game, you're allowed to sit back on the run and contain Le'Veon Bell. Like, it's a pass defense this good is designed to control an entire football game, and it's precisely what they did. 9 points to the Steelers at home. 9 points. And Antonio Brown got 19 targets. Big Ben threw the ball 55 times, and they only scored 9 points, not a single touchdown. Wow. Really, really, really impressive stuff from this defense. Jacksonville's offense, listen, they didn't dominate, but they had fewer first downs, they had fewer yards, they had fewer plays, but because of these turnovers, because of the pressure that they put on opposite teams' passing games, they were able to stuff the run, and they were able to control the entire game. 3.5 yards per carry for Lev Bell. He went 10 for 10 on receptions, which made his day. Like, on DK, it was like, I'll take it. I don't care. 20 points. Great. But, you know, it was the opposite for Fournette, man. 6.5 yards per carry, 28 touches, 2 touchdowns. That clip of him going into space and waving at that cornerback and going, bring it, that was something. That was an injury, is what it was waiting to happen. That was terrifying. That man can run hard. He can run hard. Listen, Ben Roethlisberger was bad, but Bortles is worse. 95 passing yards for 8 of 14. I'm not kidding. He only attempted 14 passes. He only completed 8. They ran the ball 37 times. And on those 14, on those Blake passes, one interception, 2 sacks. Even with that much limited volume, Blake still managed to screw it up. Like, get them a quarterback. Get a quarterback. Get Jacoby Brissett. He's not that bad. Allen Robinson would be thrilled to come back to Jacoby Brissett. As far as Pittsburgh's defense, they are giving it up to power rushers. Alex Collins blew them up in the fourth quarter last week. Leonard Fournette was filthy. Jordan Howard was filthy. Power rushers are destroying these guys. This is a thing. This is a trend. So you get a guy who's willing to, you know, really barrel through and, I don't know, maybe Kareem Hunt next week in Arrowhead against the Steelers. I'm going for it, man. I love that. I love that spot. Jacksonville's on bye next week. Oh, no, they're not. Ooh, the Rams. Ooh, baby. That's a tough one. I'll take the under. Yeah, I'd take the under on that for sure. All day. All day, take the under on that. Anyway, although, no, what am I talking about? Leonard Fournette all day. Guys, we just found our running backs for week 6. Kareem Hunt and Leonard Fournette. There it is. Antonio Brown, man, 19 targets. It's unbelievable how much volume this guy gets, how much production he creates from a fantasy perspective, and only one touchdown. I just talked about it earlier in the show. You guys know, Ben was forcing it to him. He knew he just needed one to break his way. And there's going to be games where not just one breaks his way, it's where 3 break his way, and somebody falls down and he goes for 3 different long touchdowns. You got to keep thinking about rostering AB. It doesn't matter the situation. It really doesn't. Bell, 25 total touches, 10 targets, 10 receptions. Wow. He's like Andre Ellington and Leonard Fournette. So don't get fooled by, you know, kind of a lower production day. Lev still got it. Baltimore, Oakland, Ravens blew this one up from the start. Quick deep ball from Flacco and a quick rushing touchdown. They went 7-0. Next series, Oakland fumbles, 14-0. Listen, Oakland just doesn't look good without Carr. If they can't throw the ball, this team is going to struggle. This is what they're supposed to be able to do. They're supposed to be able to spread you out, get you thin, and you know, pepper Crabtree and Cooper for 10 targets a game, and then, you know, take advantage of the fact that your defense is spread out. It's just not, they're not going to be able to put up points without that. And they have proven that, and they're going to struggle if they can't throw the ball. Washington, they struggled. Denver, they struggled. This week, they struggled as well. Good pass defenses are going to shut them down, and no Derek Carr is going to make this even worse. As far as Baltimore goes, I'm not touching these guys, but we have to be aware of something. In situations where this team is getting a lead and holding a lead, Buck Allen is going to get a ton of work. He got 20 carries again. They had the lead, and they don't worry about him fumbling. Alex Collins has a fumbling problem. Buck Allen still hasn't fumbled. You know, we saw it again. We saw in the Cincinnati game, he got 20 touches. He got 20 touches in this one. The whole backfield got 39 total touches. They went 60-40 run pass. So it's definitely a team that is willing to run the ball, control the clock, and make things really, really boring. Marshawn isn't going to eclipse 15 touches this year. He's never going to have a game where he gets more than 15 touches unless it's a playoff game or something. It's not going to happen. They need him healthy. It's very clear that they see his health is not a sure thing. They're not going to play him for that many snaps. They're comfortable putting Jalen Richard out there as well. So it's just not happening. Michael Crabtree is the best player in this offense. Even though Jared Cook did have an end zone target, didn't catch it. This offense is going to be hard to get behind. It really is. It's going to be really hard to get behind, you know, anything except for the occasional Michael Crabtree and Jared Cook until Carr comes back. And then we can treat this offense as normal. But, you know, week six, they're getting the Chargers. You'd love to say, like, fire up, you know, some EJ Manuel here with, you know, some Crabtree. It's very hard to feel like you can trust this unit. Rams, Seahawks, I knew it was going to be too good to be true. And Fern said this on the lineup show. He's just like, I don't know, guys. Like, I love Todd Gurley as much as the next guy, but there has to come a breaking point when Seattle, as a unit, watches the film and goes, this is what's wrong with our rush defense. Let's just fix that. It happened. It happened. You know, they're all pro unit. They have some of the best players in the league there. They clearly know how to play. The fact that they were allowing so much rushing production really felt a little bit more like an issue that they just had to correct rather than an actual problem with the team. So Seahawks forced 3 turnovers. They kept Gurley to 50 total yards on 16 touches. He almost had that touchdown, which would have been really nice. It would have just kind of given us a little bit more of a floor. Earl Thomas forced him out of bounds. Listen, teams are taking Sammy Watkins away. I don't necessarily know how to treat him except for the fact that there are going to be spots. There's going to be another seven reception, 2 touchdown game somewhere. The way that McVay game plans here, Watkins' talent, it's just like this guy is the most untapped talent that there is. It's just unbelievable. Tyler Higbee is also a thing. Very, very much George Kittle-esque. 8 targets, great hands, huge receiving day for him, and Goff likes him. Goff likes him, so let's keep Tyler Higbee in mind. Aaron Donald, ridiculous. And I think Aaron Donald's performance actually says more about the Seattle offensive line. When Russ gives up two interceptions and, you know, multiple sacks, this offensive line is a problem. He did the same thing against San Francisco. San Francisco was able to, if you have a good pass rush against Seattle, this offense is not viable. That's the correlation. We have seen it. San Francisco, good interior pass rushers. They could barely score 12 points. Green Bay, great pass rush, could barely score. The Rams, great pass rush, barely score. I mean, they scored, but they didn't score a lot. And where do we see their offense? We see their offense succeed against Tennessee, and we see their offense succeed against Indianapolis. Two of the worst pass defenses in the league. Two teams that allow massive, massive production way down the field. It's just very difficult. I think the Seattle offense is not, we got to be bearish about them in certain situations when teams can actually get to the quarterback. Causes massive malfunction. Jimmy Graham, man, I put him in the cheat sheet for patrons because he's underpriced. He's still leading the team in targets. And what does he do? He goes out, goes 50 yards and a touchdown. You just don't need to worry about Jimmy Graham getting reliable volume. I just don't think you should. You don't think you worry about Jimmy Graham getting reliable volume. He's going to get reliable volume. Green Bay, Dallas. Good God. We've seen two situations where quarterbacks carved up a defense with less than a minute for game-winning drives. Brady and Rodgers. You can't leave these guys any time on the clock, but I don't really know what else you can ask Dak to do. A 9-minute drive that end with a TD put them in the lead by 3 points at home. Defense couldn't even hang on for a minute and 20 seconds. It's not on Dak. It's not on the offense. That's unbelievable. He played really well. 4 total touchdowns, moved the ball up in the down the field, 103 passer rating, 69% completion rate. I love Dak. I love Dak at home. I think there's a lot of situations when we really want to play him or we're going to want to need to play him. He's underrated, and he is what makes this offense go. Cowboys are on bye this week. So it's not going to be this week. Packers are, it's just insane how much fantasy production they can create. I don't know how Adams was allowed to play. He spent the night at a hospital. His face was nearly smashed in half. He got left on a stretcher. He couldn't move. And that they have him answer a couple questions. It takes a spelling test. And now he's allowed to play football again, even though his brain is permanently damaged after one hit. Craziness. I'm not a doctor, but that just seemed like way too much. I don't know if I would have let him play just from like, I would have just been like, listen, this is football. I don't know what's up with your brain. I don't know how good it is because we have no viable way to test your brain beyond what you tell us. Just craziness. But he ended up going 11 targets, 7 receptions, and 2 TDs. Over 20 fantasy points. Craziness. Jordy scored because that's what Jordy does. Of course he does. Randall Cobb was a real, real bummer. And that was probably primarily because you saw Adams out there. Cobb doesn't need to get the same volume. Those guys have identical target shares. 21% for each, all three of them. It's identical target shares for all three of them. Aaron Jones, filthy. 19 touches, 124 yards, and a touchdown. When him and Montgomery get healthy back there, I think we are going to see a really, really, really well-distributed offense. And it's going to be tough to project which pieces we want. But in situations when this team can score 40 points, which they can do on any given weekend, we're going to want all of them. And I have no problem with that. It's just crazy how much production this offense can support. Green Bay getting the Vikings at in Minnesota. So interesting spot there. Probably will end up, could end up being a high scoring game if Bradford plays. Last game of the night, Kansas City, Houston. Listen, I was late to get on the Watson hype train, but I can't really, I'm going to continue to hammer this. I kind of can't believe it. He had an adjusted completion percent of 58%. He threw 3 deep touchdowns. It really feels like he went 6 for 16 on deep routes. 3 of those 6 deep routes turned into touchdowns. What are you doing back there? How do those turn into touchdowns? I mean, the completion rate was terrible through the first half. They really felt like, and then they just let it go. The Chiefs, the second half performance by Watson cost me a lot of money. Which is why I'm so frustrated. Because on paper, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. I don't understand it. Tilts me into oblivion. I don't know that we can project this anymore for Watson. Like, this is unsustainable. This is, has to be time for things to slow down, for him to regress. But I don't know. I'm not going to try to, you know, be the, you know, the wet blanket all over this rookie hype train. I am cautiously optimistic and mostly just cautious. Kareem Hunt, 32 total touches, but Charkandrick West got the TDs. It's Andy Reid, man. He's screwing with the film. He's screwing with the film. That's what he's doing. He's making you worry about Charkandrick West on film. Good for him. But let's talk about Alex Smith. Can we talk about Alex Smith for a second? Over 300 yards again, only 3 incompletions when he wasn't pressured in the pocket. An insane 76% completion rate. He went deep 5 times, completing passes to Tyreek Hill that were just unbelievable. Listen to these statistics on his deep passes this year. Deep middle throws, not one incompletion. On passes to the deep right side of the field, a 156 passer rating. What? This is Alex Smith. This is the no arm talent, game manager, dink and dunk, Alex Smith. West Coast offense, Alex Smith. This guy is blowing my mind, and he is fantasy viable. He's fantasy viable. Kansas City getting the Steelers on the road next week. Obviously, we like Kareem Hunt in that situation. Houston getting the Browns at home. So, of course, Deshaun Watson is very, very much in play. He's in play. Of course, he's in play. The Browns. Son of a bitch. I got to play Deshaun Watson over Matt Stafford against the Saints. This is what this is coming to, Drew Brees. I've got to think about fading Drew Brees for Deshaun Watson did next weekend. Give me a break. Week six is interesting. Falcons get the Dolphins at home. That's a terrible passing defense. Ravens Bears will be like one of the worst football games we've ever seen. The Redskins get the 49ers. So is it Terrell Pryor week? Man, there's a lot going on here on this slate. I've got a lot to talk about tomorrow. Hey, tomorrow, game-by-game breakdown. Vegas, overall rankings of teams, how teams rank, adjusted fantasy points allowed, DVOA, all that stuff, kind of the old high-level matchup type ideas about what's going on here. And then Wednesday, the player breakdown. So, guys, keep it locked here for all your NFL DFS needs. And if you haven't already, write a review on iTunes, man. Do me a favor. It's free. Thank you.